From the Lend Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 22nd day of December, 2022. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett at AgMarket.net. Look at this big snowstorm that's making its way across the Midwest right now with Mike Tenura of T-Storm Weather in Chicago, and we'll discuss what's been happening in the agricultural news for the day, too, on this Thursday. Edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. By the way, don't forget the registration is open for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits coming up January 10, 11, and 12 in Mount Vernon, East Peoria, and DeKalb. The cost is just $80. Join myself and the agricultural economist at one of those venues. Registration online at willag.org or farmdocdaily.illinois.edu.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day settled at $6.60.5, down a penny and three quarters. The May at $6.60.25, one and a half lower. And December futures at $6.25, down a penny for the day. January soybeans $14.67.75, down 13 and a quarter cents a bushel. March at $14.72, 12 and a half lower. And November down 8 3/4. New crop at $13.81 3/4. Bean meal $4. Lower, the bean oil down 51 cents. Wheat futures were off 5.5 for the March contract. Soft red at 7.62 1/4. The hard red at 8.66. It finished 2 higher on the day. Live cattle futures in Chicago in the nearby contract trading at 157.30 as they settled down 40 cents. Feeders at 186.45, 72.5 higher, and lean hogs at $89.05 for 100 pounds, up 65 cents. The crude oil for the day at $77.43, 86 cents lower per barrel. Diesel fuel or heating oil down 2 2/10 cents at $3.08, and the wholesale price of gasoline on the RBOB at $2.25.07 per gallon. That's just about unchanged on the afternoon. Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net now joins us to take a look at what's happened at the CME Group in Chicago. A lot of red on the screen as things closed out the day today. And I made note that the Dow was down some 700 points. What happened?
Well, I mean, it's just a risk-off day for the most part. You know, in all honesty, markets have really haven't had quite as much volume as normal, but they've had more volume than what you would think for this week. And so you come in here on Thursday and you expect really nothing to be going on. If you look, as far as volume is concerned, you know, for instance, March corn, you know, you were pushing 70,000 contracts. So, you know, it had a little bit more than what you think, but you go on out to D23 and there's 5,000 contracts. So very low volume as far as all the way around. You look at equities markets, and I think it's just a variety of things, but there's just been a lot of angst and concern, you know, that the equities markets are going to come under fire after the first of the year. It certainly looks like some people are trying to front run that.
Why is there concern?
I think, you know, there's just been so much talk about recession, but then at the same time, you know, you've got interest rates, of course, came down again this month. I think that the Fed had a lot of pressure on them to do so, but, you know, I think that there's just concern whenever you look at, for instance, housing starts and, you know, unemployment's not that bad of shape, but I think overall people are just frustrated with, you know, the fact that interest rates are going higher, and it's made people maybe a little bit more hesitant to step into big purchases. I think your smaller purchases certainly seem to be doing well. You know, a lot of the retail industry basically said this, and most people have spent, you know, during the holiday season. So that's a really good sign. But I think big purchases are maybe a different story.
Last night, President Zelensky from Ukraine was on Capitol Hill addressing a joint session of Congress. It appears to have been well received. What do you suppose, as we close in a couple months on the year in full year of war in Ukraine, that impact will have over the next couple or several weeks, especially if more than is expected might be approved to support Ukraine?
Well, that's a really good question, and that might even be over my head just a little bit. I mean, the thing is, we've been supporting Ukraine all along, you know, and I don't know how that's going to impact us, so to speak. I think that, it's certainly going to be viewed by everyone in a little bit different light. I mean, I don't know about you, Todd, but you know, I feel like we've certainly given a lot of support. I'd like to see the EU step in and actually do something here, but at the same time, you know, I think there's a lot of concern. I think moving forward, that it's going to put us in a precarious situation with the kind of money that's flowing into that part of the world. I think whenever people start paying taxes this next spring, they're probably going to say, you know what, I sure wish I didn't have near the tax bill, you know, and maybe we'd have pulled 20% of the money that we'd sent over there. But it's going to be very interesting how it impacts us long term, because eventually bills have to be paid. You know, we've written a lot of checks over the last couple, 3 years, and I'm afraid that, you know, all of us are going to be the ones paying those bills.
Turn your attention elsewhere to South America. They've got a soybean crop that will begin to be harvested very early on, sometime in January. And it appears that the price of soybeans shipped to China from there is better than it is from the United States. How much of a problem will that be?
Well, I mean, you know, the thing is that we've had a heck of a book so far whenever it comes to these soybeans. So, you know, I think whenever you get into that February time frame, we're probably going to see our export sales and shipments are going to go down significantly from what we've enjoyed so far. Are we still going to be able to hit the USDA goal? I think we've got a shot. You know, if you look at the way that we've rolled along here now today, export sales weren't all that great. But up through today, they've certainly been a pleasant surprise. So, you know, I think moving forward, you know, it's going to be a function of several different factors. You know, what's the dollar going to be looking like? We understand, you know, that the dollar is strong today, but we're still down here at 104. Whenever we, you know, look at how that compares to the way the market has reacted, you know, over the last several months, this is some of the lowest prices that we've printed, you know, and so you've got to assume that moving forward, if the dollar stays on the low end, it might keep us fairly competitive in this game. But I still think with the amount of supply available out of the Southern Hemisphere, it's really tough to think, you know, that our exports aren't going to be cut drastically.
Given the risk-off situation that took place in Chicago today, should producers be concerned at all for both corn and soybean?
You know, I don't know. I mean, you're down two on corn, 11 or 12, 13 cents on beans, but you're still looking at Jan beans at 14.68, you know, and you're looking at March corn at 6.60. So, you know, I mean, if they're concerned, at least they're concerned at a very high price. Okay. So, you know, I've got to say, if you've got a lot of old crops sitting around as far as corn is concerned, I do think that if the market falls back, basis is probably going to try to do the work. You should get a little bit of a basis push here and there. There's certainly areas west of us that need corn. And I think whenever you get out past the next 3 or 4 months, which they've got their needs booked for, from what we know, once you get out past that, I think there's an opportunity basis in certain parts of the country could get quite interesting. So, you know, I think as far as beans are concerned, yeah, we're probably not seeing as a lot of $15 cash posts like we've seen up here lately over the last couple, 3 weeks. But we're still looking at awfully good bean prices. So I think the big concern for me, for the most part, is going to be more concerned with 23, considering we've got so much invested in this 23 crop. So we've got to be a little cautious as to, you know, throw cold water on $6 corn.
Hey, thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you, bud.
Mm-hmm. That's Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net. As we close out the 2022 growing season, Illinois is losing a lot of clout in Washington, D.C., with a combined 20 years on the House Ag Committee. Sherry Bustos and Rodney Davis will both leave Congress at the end of the year. For Bustos, a 2023 farm bill, she says, is all about protecting crop insurance.
We traveled all around the nation meeting with hundreds of family farmers with one question that we threw out there, which is, what do you want to see in the 2023 Farm Bill? Especially in the Midwest, it's all around crop insurance. When you go out west, it's all around water. But having that strong safety net, especially in a time in our world history that the weather is so unpredictable. And so I would say if there's one item that we want to make sure comes out the other end in a good place, it would be our safety net for our family farmers.
And Davis says, for his wish, wants choices maintained within risk management programs.
10 years ago, we were dealing with extensions of the current Farm Bill. We didn't have choices between risk management programs like ARC and PLC. We didn't have the substantial investments in ag research that we have now. And I was able to ensure that in the Farm Bill of 2014, that farmers were able to choose between the risk management programs so that they could figure out which one worked best for them and their operation. So they got to choose between ARC and PLC. The last Farm Bill, I made sure they could choose every year. Couple that with standing strong to protect our farmers' access to the public-private partnership and call crop insurance. That's pre-planned disaster assistance that saves taxpayers billions of dollars every time we have an ag disaster.
Both Davis and Bustos were elected to Congress in 2012. In today's agricultural news, U.S. officials are threatening Mexico with a dispute settlement proceeding over its planned GMO corn ban and requesting a second dispute process with Canada over dairy under the USMCA trade pact. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack met with top Mexican officials recently to hear their counteroffer on banning imports of U.S. GMO corn in 2024, but warned it must comply with the USMCA.
We've expressed in no uncertain terms that it needs to be rectified, it needs to be modified and changed, that it's in the not only in the best interest of our corn growers, it's also, as importantly, in the best interest of the livestock industry in Mexico.
Secretary Vilsack and U.S. Trade Ambassador Catherine Tai did not disclose details of Mexico's counteroffer, but Vilsack threatened to work to trigger a USMCA dispute resolution process, a threat with support from key U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley.
Whatever they offer better be in conjunction and in the spirit of the USMCA, or otherwise we shouldn't accept it. In fact, if they don't offer something that's reasonable and takes care of the problem that they're going to have free trade across the border with Mexico, then we need to file our complaints.
The U.S. is also filing a new request for dispute settlement talks with Canada after an earlier dispute panel failed to get Canada to fully fix its dairy tariff rate quota that favors Canadian processors. Well, U.S. egg production was down 5% in the month of November. American egg production totaled $8.87 billion in November. That's 5% below the same time last year. November egg production per 100 layers was 2,369 eggs, slightly lower than the previous November. Total layers in the United States as of December 1st totaled 375 million. And finally, the full Senate Wednesday confirmed the nomination of a former USDA Deputy Undersecretary for the position of Undersecretary of Trade and Foreign Agricultural Affairs. Rod Bain has more from USDA.
Another senior-level position at the U.S. Department of Agriculture has officially been filled.
Agriculture is not just what I do, but very much who I am. Working to support farmers and ranchers across the country is something I have dedicated my career to.
Alexis Taylor at her Senate Agriculture Committee confirmation hearing earlier this year. The full Senate late Wednesday confirmed the former Oregon Department of Agriculture Director and USDA Deputy Undersecretary as the new Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Agricultural Affairs. The Iowa native and member of a farm family notes the importance of both USDA market development programs for global exports and humanitarian programs to provide aid to nations across the world.
Some of my most meaningful work has been finding solutions to the complex challenges our farmers and ranchers face. Throughout my career, farmers and ranchers have shared those challenges with me. I will carry their stories with me as I work to advance U.S. agriculture across the globe.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
That's a look at the agricultural news for the afternoon. A quick reminder to register now for the Illinois Farm Economics Summits. Not long after the new year, January 10, 11, and 12, in fact, the agricultural economists, the Farm Doc team, will be on the road. We'll be in Mount Vernon January 10th and East Peoria on the 11th and DeKalb on the 12th. You can join us for the Illinois Farm Economic Summit, the IFAS series, in person this year. The cost is just $80, $85 if you mail in the registration, and $90 if you walk in. $80 again to register online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. let's take a look now outside of the Illinois-Indiana region, where, as we well know, the drought did not have a big impact this year. In fact, Illinois has a record corn crop of 215 bushels to the acre across the whole of the state, according to the last USDA crop production report. Agricultural conditions, however, in the Minneapolis Federal Reserve's district in the upper Midwest remains surprisingly strong despite a drought in their area. That's the opinion of Joe Mahon. He's the regional outreach director for the Minneapolis Federal Reserve. And despite supply changes and challenges and soaring input costs, Mahon says commodity prices are keeping things in pretty good shape.
The data that we have available to us indicate that farm incomes in 2022 have increased from a year ago, and 2021 was a pretty strong year itself. So that's overall a pretty good picture. It's maybe a little bit surprising given what we've seen happen to the inputs. Now, one thing that we know is that a lot of producers buy their inputs, particularly fertilizer and chemical, a year ahead. And so they're still working off inputs that they bought before the really big surge. And so the concern then is about what might happen next year, especially if we see a reversion and crop prices.
While the overall condition of the district's agricultural economy is in solid shape, Mahon says parts of the district struggled in 2022.
The one exception I think that you can point to this year was in the Golden Triangle region of Montana. I was out there in August during the wheat and barley harvest, and they had a pretty bad drought this year. And actually, it's been 2 years in a row of pretty bad drought. What I will say is that if you look at the crop production numbers from Montana, the wheat and barley production out of Montana was actually up a little bit this year, but well below what you typically see. And what I was hearing from producers out there was that the wheat crop was pretty good quality, even though the total production was down. Yields were way down. Pretty good protein content. The dry weather was kind of helped with getting the crop dried.
Here's where we need to pay attention. Cattle producers in that region also struggled with drought. They could not find enough feed and wound up reducing their herd sizes quite a bit. Looking back over the year, while there were several challenges for producers to deal with, drought was probably the biggest factor affecting success.
In 2022, it might have been, other than just higher diesel costs, higher transportation costs, higher input costs across the board. That's the thing that I've tended to hear about most, even in some of the areas that were pretty heavily hit by drought.
And looking into the new year, Mahon says there will be more challenges.
Well, it's interesting because we're looking back, you know, over the past year, what were we just talking about? We were talking about drought, right? And weather is kind of, especially this far out, impossible to predict. And so that's kind of always going to be, I think, the biggest question. What happens globally is going to be another major question that people are going to worry about throughout the year, just in terms of markets staying open and various other kind of geopolitical shocks that happen both on the input and on the commodity output side as well.
Mahon, again from the Federal Reserve in Minneapolis, says one protection that the ag economy has in place is that people will always need food.
Agriculture is kind of acyclical with the rest of the economy. So that's something that if I were a producer, I maybe wouldn't be as worried about. People always need food. And so whether the economy is good or bad, they might change their food consumption habits, but they still need to eat. And so it's really these other factors that tend to drive the cycle in agriculture, like I said, weather, international conditions, and sort of trade conditions and things of that nature.
Joe Mahon is with the Minneapolis Federal Reserve. His comments came to us courtesy of Chad Smith and the National Association of Farm Broadcasting News Service. Let's check the weather forecast now with Mike Tenora. That's at tstorm.net online. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us, and happy holidays to you.
Yeah, same to you. Thanks a lot, Todd.
Well, tell me about the big storm. Mostly, I want to know about the cold, how long it will be with us.
Well, it's not going to last very long. It will be pretty intense over the next couple of days. But once we get into the weekend, and especially early next week, temperatures are going to warm sharply. We're talking about temperatures that will be at least 50 degrees warmer than they are today in the plains, and then that warmth will overspread in the rest of the Corn Belt. And so by the time we get into Tuesday and Wednesday next week, it's entirely possible to see temperatures in the 30s and 40s across the Corn Belt, and we'll even see some 50s later on next week. So even though it is going to be pretty bad today, and even tomorrow will be pretty cold and windy, it doesn't last very long at all.
Whatever transportation issues then we have will be snarled for a day or two and then really fixed very quickly by the time we get into next week. Let's turn our attention in that case to South America. If they get rainfall there over this holiday week, it'll be interesting to see in light trade what happens at the CME Group. Could be ugly, I would think. What are conditions like, and is there rain in the offing?
Well, in Argentina, the story is pretty much the same as it has been. They're in a drought, and the drought is going to continue. If you look at rainfall over the last 30 days, the last 60 days, 90 days, going all the way back to May, it's going to pretty much end up being either number one, maybe number two, or number three driest over all these periods of time, going back more than 40 years in the key provinces of Argentina. So this is a major drought that they're in, and the drought is not going to break over the next few days. We will see some storms here and there through Saturday. We'll probably see a few more at the end of next week and into next weekend. But we should be getting around 1 to 1.5 inches of rain per week at this time of the year. And even though we'll see similar totals to that over the next week, that's just not enough to end this drought. And it's going to be surrounded by dry weather before and after. So the Argentina story is not going to end immediately. We're still going to need to see some big rains, and we'll need to see them sooner than later in Argentina, especially coming up by mid-January. They're still planting soybeans now, so soybeans have a fairly lengthy window to get out of this situation. But early corn is certainly being stressed by this, and the later planted corn is going in the ground now, and it's going in the ground in dry condition. And yes, we all know if you plant in the dust, your bins will bust. But the problem here is that this is just a little too dry. We need more rain. There is some on the way. This is still a story for 2023 as opposed to right now. But this needs to happen, because if it doesn't, this will go down as basically the worst drought they've ever seen for their growing season.
And then if you move a little bit to the north, what does southern Brazil look like?
Well, they're getting dry as well, but they haven't been as nearly as dry as in Argentina. And they've also been much wetter than what was taking place a year ago when they were going through one of their driest periods ever. And even though there's not too much rain on the way over the next week, which has been a bit of a concern, there's a number of signals that suggest two cool fronts are going to converge on the region about a week from now. And when that happens, that will lift the air and create a favorable environment for thunderstorms 1 to 2 weeks out. So we think that the end of December and the first few days of January will be fairly stormy in southern Brazil and in Paraguay. And as long as that happens, that will help to at least ensure a decent soybean crop, with weather later on in January then determining if we're going to have a really big crop or if just we're going to have a normal crop.
Hey, thank you very much.
Yeah, great being here, Todd.
That's Mike Tenura. He is with T-Storm Weather. You can find him online at tstorm.net. Find us online at willag.org. There you'll find our daily agricultural programming to listen to anytime you'd like. You can also get yourself registered for that Illinois Farm Economics Summit. We'll be in Mount Vernon on January the 10th, East Peoria at the Paradise Hotel on the 11th, and DeKalb on Ferrandez on the 12th. You can join us. The agricultural economists will be on the road in the month of January. Scott Irwin, Joe Jansen, Gary Schnitke, Jonathan Kappas, Nick Paulson, along with Bruce Sherrick, will make presentations in the morning. The cost is just $80, and that includes your noon hour meal. We'll finish with that during the day. Question and answer session, and you can always talk to everybody, because all of us will be there throughout the morning. You can join us. Just register now at willag.org or farmdocdaily.illinois.edu for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits.